Dave Phillips, congratulations on winning the Pulitzer Prize. It is the it's the biggest award you can get in journalism. How do you feel?
Speechless.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were a runner up for your 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. Piece. I mean, but I knew what was out there in terms of competition, and the competition was really, really good. And so I wrote it off. You know, it's not why I did the work. And so I thought, you know, if it happens, it happens. Great. If not, fine. And just forgot about it. Forgot about it to the point when my editor said, hey, I really need you to call in to the newspaper at 1 o'clock tomorrow. It didn't even occur to me like, oh, that's when the Pulitzer Prizes are being announced. And then when it happened, I was just dumbfounded. I mean, what do you even say? It's on an honor that is bigger than anyone, you know. It's not so much an honor for me as it is for this story, for this craft. And so, you know, for that, my name to be attached to that, it is very humbling.
I wonder if you would read a few paragraphs of the story just to kind of hook people who may not have read it. They can go to the Gazette and read it and can find a link at krcc.org as well. But I'm just going to see if you'd read a few paragraphs from the opening segment.
I would love that. This is the beginning of our three-day series. Cash Alvaro stared at the ceiling of an emergency room in January, listening to the beep of an EKG monitor for what he guessed was the 80th time in 12 months. The once healthy Afghanistan war veteran had collapsed in a hallway that night, then awakened confused in an ambulance and lurched up in alarm, swinging and yelling until the paramedics held him down and injected sedatives. Now he lay alone in the room at Memorial Hospital, quietly weeping. Alvaro joined the Army at the age of 18 in 2008. In Afghanistan in 2009, he was hit by multiple bomb blasts, including one that threw him across the road like a lawn dart. Sophisticated armor helped him escape with just bruises, but the blasts battered his brain. Ever since, he has been hit with heart spasms and seizures. Alvaro is in many ways the typical modern disabled veteran. He survived combat with barely a scratch, but later was diagnosed with what have become the most common wounds of a decade of war, traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, which together likely affect more than 500,000 veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, the Department of Defense said.
So those are pretty staggering numbers. And just to bring the story back to Colorado Springs a little bit, how many folks who are suffering from either of these ailments, these brain injuries, are living in Colorado Springs now, and how many of them have been discharged? Do you know those numbers?
I don't think anybody knows those numbers. I don't think that the people in the Army that actually have access to every record have any idea. And that's part of the problem, is these injuries are hard to diagnose. Often they're viewed with suspicion by the military. And so, you know, even with the best people who have noble intentions, you can't tell who's really injured and who's just breaking the rules.
But they're not making it any easier for people to get a diagnosis and to get the help that they need.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest issue that created this problem, and the problem in a nutshell, is that you can get kicked out of the Army for minor misconduct, for doing things like not showing up on time a couple times, or missing a doctor's appointment, or being disrespectful to a superior. And if you are kicked out in that way, you are separated from your veterans' benefits forever. And oftentimes, guys with these types of injuries, those are symptoms. Missing appointments, forgetting things, agitation, irritability. And so it was really unclear, you know, what is injury and what is misbehavior? And the Army was unable to figure that out. Now, the bigger problem, the systematic problem that I think caused other things to happen, is if you have a combat injury, what the Army's supposed to do is discharge you medically, and you get benefits and you get handed off to the VA and you're taken care of. The problem is that system is now clogged and dysfunctional, and it takes, on average, 14 months for that to happen. In the meantime, your combat unit cannot get a replacement for you. And so therefore, you know, you're this injured soldier who can no longer do your job, but they can't get someone who can do that job for a long time. And so low-level commanders are put in a position of having to decide, okay, do I do right by this soldier and send him the medical route, or do I try and do right by the unit, which, you know, might have a third of its guys that fit into that category, and get rid of these guys, get functional people in there so that we can have a unit that will work, because guess what? We have to deploy in 3 months.
So it sounds like there are some systematic things in place that create this sort of contemporary catch-22.
Yeah. I mean, there's incentive to get rid of guys, essentially.
Obviously, it presents, in the worst-case scenarios, a real public health issue, which you also reported on. And what is the military's response to this public health issue that, in many ways, they are dumping back into the lap of society without taking responsibility?
You know, what was frustrating with me in reporting that is I couldn't have that conversation with anyone at the military because none of them agreed that it was going on. You know, because they disagreed with my whole premise that wounded guys were being put out without benefits, I couldn't then ask the question, and do you think that action then endangered society? Because they're like, well, it's not happening.
Right.
So, but we've seen it. You can see it in Colorado Springs all the time, you know, that people struggle, that they need support. And probably the people that are kicked out with misconduct need support the most.
You probably could have taken your show on the road some time ago with your book and your even being a runner-up for the Pulitzer. What's kept you here in Colorado Springs and what's kept you at the Gazette?
I was born in Colorado Springs. My whole family's here. I just love it. It's my town. And I actually have left the Gazette off and on as we've struggled. We were bankrupt. There were times when I thought it was irresponsible to stay. You know, show's over. Time to go look somewhere else. You know, fortunately, we have new ownership, and that's brought some more stability. But the Gazette means something to me. You know, the Gazette was founded by William Jackson Palmer. We reported statehood as breaking news. You know, I really enjoy being there. This is my home.
Once again, I want to congratulate you. I think I speak for many, if not all people in this community, when I say that we're very proud of you, and it's an honor to the whole city. Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you very much.